This is Julie at Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, we're the show for you. Hello and welcome to episode 2 of Dogcast Radio. On this episode, what breed is this woman talking about?
If you haven't had a male before, most people will steer them in the direction of having a female.
What's Buddy talking about?
Neighbourhood cats, pigeons, squirrels, fawning leaves, and occasionally bees, if they're very big.
And what on earth is this man talking about?
After he's learned to do kickboxing, I'm going to learn him to teach the drums.
Well, more of all that later. First of all, let's get straight to work with Joe Timko's training tip. Do you have trouble with your dog lunging and jumping up at people when they come into your house? Or does it push through the door before you? Joe's got advice to stop that problem.
To teach the stay command, well, you would start off with teaching them how to sit or to lie down, because you need them to stay somehow so you can practice a stay. So I would first teach them to sit, you know, by placing them in a sit, maybe lifting up their underneath, their, putting your hand under their neck and lifting their jaw area up of their mouth, and then tucking their rear end near their tail, tucking the rear end in. When I say tuck it in, I mean kind of don't push it down, because you don't want to hurt the hips. You want to kind of tuck their rear end under, like their with your fingers, so you're not wrenching their hips. Then when the rear end touches the ground, you say sit. And now you tell them to stay. If their rear end pops up, you tuck them right into a sit again, and then you tell them stay. And you start building, you know, you're teaching the sit and the stay simultaneous, but you've got to get them to realize, oh, I see that stay means I can't move from this position. And then you continue that with your down. Once the dog knows what sit means and it realizes it has to stay, then you put them in a new behavior, like down, where you would just take their front legs out from underneath them with one hand, and with the other hand, you're putting the other hand on their shoulder blades, and you're placing them into a nice down position, and then again saying stay to them. If they get up, you have your hand on the shoulder blades, you take your legs from under them, and you push them into a down again, and then you tell them stay. So they realize whenever they're in any behavior, any position, and you tell them to stay, they have to stay there. Okay, now what you do is you bring them to a doorway and you tell them to sit. If they don't, you place them in a sit and you open the door. Now, this is all on leash, mind you. You always have the leash on them. Now, you bring them to a doorway, you open the door. If they get up from their sit, you put them back into their sit command and you tell them to stay as you open the door. And you make them stay there until you walk them through the door by saying let's go or heel or whatever the command or whatever your dog knows at that point. But the dog has to realize it can't go through that door until it hears you say either let's go or heel. If they go through the door, you tug them back into the room so they don't lunge out that door without you. And as you say let's go, when you're walking through the door, they have to stay beside you. If they go to move out ahead too quickly, you're going to give the leash a tug back so that their nose does not pass your toes as you're walking through the door. This will keep them from lunging out the door.
If you'd like to find out more about Joe Timko or his training establishment, Canyon View Ranch, there's a link to his website on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com.
Things your dog would probably never say.
No, thanks. I'm not hungry right now.
This month we're going to be profiling a dog that comes from the working group. It has Roman origins, where it was a cattle dog. Later on, it guarded money that was in a purse round its neck, and I would bet that money would be fairly safe. I talked to Kimberly MacDonald from Somala Rottweilers and asked her what's special about owning a Rottweiler.
there isn't just one thing about a Rottie. There's a whole multitude of things all mixed up into one. They get on with everything. If you socialise them and rear them correctly, they make a lovely family pet. They mix with kids, other dogs, other animals, everything.
Mm. What would your advice be to someone who is looking to buy a Rottweiler?
Not to rush into it. To read some books to begin with. Talk to some breeders. And you want to talk to reputable breeders, not the one-off people.
Mm.
You want to look on the internet sites. You want to ask lots and lots of questions. The books tell you a varied amount of things, but there's nothing but going to meet one in person. Meet several if you can. Look up when the shows are, especially the breed shows, because they've got all sorts going on, not just showing but agility. They have some obedience on as well, so it's that you could go and meet Rotties at all ages, basically, if they go to a breed show. And basically, if you haven't had a male before, most people will steer them in the direction of having a female, because the males go through their adolescence anything from a year old. Not everyone, but some do. So.
Okay. What health checks or issues are there to be aware of when you're buying and bringing up a Rottweiler?
Well, a Rottie, the temperament is paramount.
Mm.
You must make sure that the litter and the dogs live in the family home. They're not brought up in kennels. And make sure that the owner of the bitch, because 9 times out of 10 the stud dog, the father of the puppies, will not be there, but it'd be nice if they could show you pictures of him, or you could, if he didn't live too far away, you could go and meet him. But basically they have to be hip scored. Elbows is of your own free will at the moment, but hopefully most of the clubs will take it on board, but it's all up in the air at the moment. I have been elbow scoring for the last 2 years, and intend to keep it up. And some lines have some eye problems and that, but it's not a big thing in Rotties. They do suffer with entropion every now and again in certain lines. Hip scoring is the most important thing making sure the temperament is correct.
Once you've got your Rottweiler, how about training? How easy is that? How intelligent is a Rottweiler?
A Rottweiler has a brain and he will use it. If you don't train him or her, they will do what they want. And once they get over 1 year old, sometimes it's a little bit difficult and they're stubborn to dissuade them to do otherwise. So we always tell people, you start your training, or they start their training with us before they go.
Yeah.
But once they get into their new homes, we tell people to do a couple of minutes twice a day. Always end on a good note, ignore bad behaviour and praise good. As soon as they've had their vaccinations, they can usually go out after the second one, after about 4 or 5 days, and enrol them in a good training club. They do puppy socialisations all the way through to further advanced obedience if they want to go that way. Some puppies are switched on to do the further advanced obedience, some aren't. But a good trainer will be able to spot that. The training starts the minute they get their puppy home.
Yeah.
And you must be firm, but not a bully. You can't be physical. If you are, then the rot will retaliate. If you're firm with them and they learn their place right from the word go, they do learn quickly, very quickly, and they want to please.
Who mainly buys the puppies? Is it families? Is it single people? Who buys the puppies?
It's a multitude of people, really. Most of our homes are pet homes. They go into families or young couples, of course temperament has to be 100%.
Yeah.
Especially if you've got young children. We have our litters puppy aptitude tested by qualified assessors. We don't have every litter done, but we're more so with the European lines. Me as a breeder should know my puppies inside out because I'm with them all the time. But there are a lot of people that don't. And they let people come in and just pick a puppy, and sometimes that might be the most dominant one in the litter, and you've got trouble then.
Yeah.
Because that will come in if you've got children under 5, and it will work its way up, trying to determine where it is in the pack. Whereas we don't do that. I've always picked my puppies for my homes, because I know my puppies best. Normally, as I say, they are pretty easygoing, and as long as it's the rearing and the continued training afterwards. And if they do all that correctly, then you should end up with a well-socialised, happy member of society.
Yeah. Well, saying that, one of your dogs should be going to be a pat dog, shouldn't they?
Yes, Luger. Yes, bless him. His mum is a vet nurse down in Cornwall.
Mm.
And she's done well with him in obedience and shows. His character test graded excellent. and he's got all three Casey Awards under his collar as well.
Mm.
And he had his interview with the Pets as Therapy lady about 2 weeks ago now. I've just sent off the reference for them. So fingers crossed they should know in the next 2 weeks whether he's going to be accepted into being a Pets as Therapy dog down in Cornwall.
I talked to Donna later about her dog Luger and his successful journey to become a pat dog.
Okay, a pat dog is obviously stands for Pets as Therapy, and basically it's for people that haven't got pets of their own, that are either, you know, in hospitals or old people's homes, that are, you know, are not able to get out and sort of see their pets anymore. And then obviously you're able to take your, you know, your pet in so that they can see them and pat them and chat to them and things. So at least, you know, so they get some sort of stimulation of being back in the outside world again.
Mm-hmm. And what are the qualities that you would look for in a pat dog, do you think?
One that's very calm and not sort of boisterous and running about, and obviously being a cousin. You go and visit, you know, a lot of elderly people, so you wouldn't want to frighten them and things. Obviously one that's, you know, going to be well behaved and sort of, you know, done all of, you know, socialising as a puppy and everything, because obviously you do have sort of meetings and things where you have to meet up with all the other pet dog owners. So obviously they, you know, got to be good with other dogs and things. And basically like being stroked and, you know, having their tummies tickled and just sort of spending time with people, really.
And how did you qualify?
I had to, obviously, before I actually did it, I had to let the instructor know that he had been to puppy classes and things, and obviously that he was a well-behaved dog rather than, you know, just going straight into it and not having done any training, because obviously he would just, you know, fail straight away. So I did all his puppy classes and the beans. He did his... I mean, not every dog, you know, has to do this, but I did it with him. I did his Good Systems, Bronze, Silver and Gold. And he also did his Rottweiler character assessment, which he passed with excellence. So after I'd done that, I then thought, well, he was so well behaved and he's such a good boy, that he'd obviously maybe be good as a pat dog. So obviously I phoned the coordinator and, we sort of met on neutral grounds, and once he, you know, had been to like walk around and familiarised himself of where he was, then, you know, she made sure that they didn't pull on the lead and jump up to people that were approaching them, that I was able to groom him without any problems. I had to sort of pull him around by his collar and make sure that he wasn't growly or anything. She then had to give him a treat, and she then took him for a walk and patted him and sort of made a fuss of him to make sure that, you know, he just didn't mind being patted and things by strangers. And then she chucked some things on the floor and made some loud noises to make sure that obviously he wasn't going to be scared of maybe somebody falling over or somebody, she dropped some food on the floor, and obviously I had to make sure that he didn't rush over to the food to, you know, nick it straight away. Food on floors and hospitals and things.
Yeah.
And just make sure he was, like, you know, 100% bomb-proof, really, and that he wasn't really going to, you know, hurt anybody or anything, you know, when you went to visit them.
Had you done any pet visiting or things like that before?
I haven't, no, never before, but I've always, you know, heard about it and read about it, and a couple of people, elderly people that I know, have said they've had pet dogs come and visit them in hospital, and it's made them feel, you know, really good because, you know, they've been able to stroke a pet, and, you know, because they've, you know, miss their pets that they've had at home, so.
So it's a really worthwhile thing to do, isn't it?
Yes, and it gives you a lot of satisfaction to sort of, I've been talking to people that sort of do it already, and they said you get a lot of satisfaction out, you know, seeing the reactions on people's faces who, you know, have, you know, might have been in hospital a while and, you know, and you know, never and sort of see their own pets again, so. And they sometimes, having a pet there, they very often talk to the pet about, you know, their problems, and some of the, you know, hospital staff can't get out of them, you know, what the problem is, and so you then obviously, you know, can go back and tell the hospital staff, and, you know, they can go from there then.
And what's Luger's attitude to it all?
He was just a bit, well, he's quite laid back about it all. He thinks it's great, he can go, because he loves people, he thinks it's just another load of people he can go and visit.
The amazing thing is that Luger is under 2 years old. Back to Kimberly now at Somala Rottweilers to tell us more about breeding Rottweilers.
Are Rottweilers easy to breed, or...?
Pretty straightforward, but again, it's knowing your dog.
Mm.
And they always have 8+ in their litters.
Wow.
More for them, though, because it's them that has to bring them up. You know, we have to help, but they've got to do most of it, bless them.
And, yeah.
For an average litter of Rotties, you're looking sort of 6 to 8 puppies, but most do have more.
Mm.
But then you have to think, you know, after 10, you've got to think as a bitch.
Mm.
Because, you know, rearing more than 10 is hard work, and you have to wean them sooner.
Yeah.
You know, to get them off her and, you know, bring, because they'll demand more anyway. And some bitches only have 8 to 10 teats anyway. So it's a little bit difficult when you get 10 or more.
Yes.
We've reared 14, that's our biggest.
Oh, wow.
And 7 asleep and 7 awake, so it worked pretty well for 2.5 weeks. After that, they could fend for themselves, and it worked out really well. And all 14 are still 4.5 years old.
Mm, excellent.
So.
And how do you feel when the puppies leave?
It's sad, but from 6 weeks, you know that they're ready to go, because if you kept a litter together, the fights would continue, the punch-ups would continue, the fur would still be flying, and basically what they're starting to do is assert themselves as a pack, and they're trying to work out, like in a wolf pack, who would be the alpha female or male and who would be the underling, and if you continue to let that happen, you know, it's not fair on anyone. So, you know, from 6 weeks old, you know, that's when they're starting to tell you that, yeah, we're here, we're eating, we're doing everything that we should. Our puppies go from 7.5 weeks, not before.
No.
And yes, we get lumps in our throat, but you can't keep them all.
Mm.
And it's time, you know, they need to be in their new homes and experiencing all the different things and getting their own little characters.
Yeah.
They're only not even part, all formed at sort of 8 weeks old. Every experience that they can come into contact with is a bonus. And I always say to people, what you put in now, you reap the rewards later on.
Mm. Mm. So what's the best thing about owning a Rottweiler?
Best thing, we get lots of licks. And they're very faithful, and they're loyal. And once you've had one, I mean, I always said I'd have another shepherd, but I haven't yet.
Mm.
And they will always be in my life, no matter what.
And now, for our younger listeners, it's puppy playtime.
You can make training your dog fun by teaching him some tricks. An easy trick to teach is shake hands. Most dogs will give you a paw to show that they are friendly, and it doesn't take much skill to teach him to do it on command. Start by putting your hand near the dog's foot. If he doesn't put his paw into your hand, you can either tap his foot or lift it up. Give him a treat. Do this a few times so he gets the idea of what you want. Then you can add a command like shake hands or give me 5. If your dog already does this trick, you can develop it into wave. Put your hand out as if to shake hands, but as he lifts his foot, pull your hand back and say wave. Give him a treat. He will soon get the idea. Another way to develop shake hands is into marching. Raise your foot and give the shake hands command. If your dog raises his foot, give him a treat. Then try the other foot. Treat your dog and give lots of praise when teaching tricks. Keep the session short. 2 minutes 2 or 3 times a day is better than 5 minutes all in one go. If your dog can already do all these tricks, well done. Perhaps you could send us some trick training tips. Also, keep sending in your funny crossbreeds for our competition results next month.
Things your dog would probably never say.
You go ahead without me. I'll be fine by myself.
Herding breeds are very popular, and we've all met German shepherds. Have you ever met an Australian shepherd? Well, they're quite an intriguing breed. But where do you go to find out about Australian shepherds? Well, Australia. I talked to Jenny from Cashar Kennels.
What's nice about Australian Shepherds is that they're a very, very easy dog to live with, a very, very easy dog to care for. They don't require a huge amount of coat maintenance. They've got a very easy care coat. They don't require huge amounts of exercise, although that does vary depending on the dog. And they're just really nice people to have around.
Mm-hmm. And how did you first encounter Australian Shepherds?
I first encountered them at a show, and a friend of mine had a visitor from the eastern states of Australia that had Australian Shepherds, and they asked me if I would help handle their dogs at a show. And then she got one, and I showed him through to his Australian Champion title, and it just went from there. Then I ended up with one and two and three and four, and here I am today.
They're addictive.
They're very addictive. You can't stop at one.
And how would they compare with a Border Collie?
I have lived with both. I find them a lot calmer than a Border Collie. They have an off switch, which I tend to think the Border Collie lacks a little bit. They can be going full on, having a ball, but when the game's over, they will switch off and calm down. They don't have to be on the go doing things all the time. There are the odd one and two that do, but generally speaking, they're a lot calmer.
Would they be a good dog if you want to do fly ball and things like that?
They are a fantastic performance dog. They will do anything you want to do. They're very, very easy to train. I do obedience and agility, and I show my dogs. I've also done fly ball with one of them. I've got a lady in another state of Australia that has one of my dogs that has its tracking champion title. They've got a lot of natural herding instincts, so there's Australian Shepherds out there with herding titles in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
They can do pretty much anything. They're fantastic with families. They are a very, very loyal dog. They will herd the children, keep them in one area. The only thing you have to watch is, of course, when they're a puppy, they're big enough to knock small children over. And puppies tend to be a little bit boisterous, but they are fantastic with kids. And a very easy dog to socialise. They should never be aggressive towards people or other dogs. That's very uncharacteristic of the breed. Very friendly, love people, and just love being around people and love attention.
Mm-hmm. What were they originally bred for? What was their original purpose?
Their original purpose was a herding dog. And they're still used in the US to this day. Very much on the ranches in the US as a herding dog. Well, the history that I've been told is that they originated in Australia, and there's many varying stories as to what breeds they originated from, but that they originally went to America with the first Merinos that were exported to America. And the Americans then developed the breed from those dogs and called it the Australian Shepherd.
Because it's not just Australian Shepherds that you live with. Can you tell us what breeds you live with?
My husband has Alaskan Malamutes. My daughter has Italian Greyhounds. And I have the Australian Shepherds, a couple of Briards, and a standard Poodle. And we also have an old Irish Red and White Setter.
All right. And do they all mix in okay?
They all mix in, except for the Malamutes. Everybody mixes in well together. I can run the big dogs with the little dogs. The Italian Greyhounds sometimes run with the Australian Shepherds and the Briards, and they all get along beautifully.
It's a family affair then, the dogs?
Oh, very much so, yes. We all show. I'm the only one that does obedience and agility, but my daughter wants to get into that in the future. But, yeah, we do the whole lot, and all of us are involved in the dogs, yes.
To find out more about Jenny and her family and her kennels and all the different breeds she lives with, you can visit geocities.com/kaashadogs, that's kaashadogs/.
Things your dog would probably never say.
Not right now. I'm busy.
If you're in the UK, you might well be interested in attending the James Well-Beloved Annual Symposium in October. The co-host is Mike Mullen. Mike is the Vice President of the Doberman Club of Great Britain, amongst many other things, and he gave me some information about what to expect from the day.
It's the Jane's well-beloved annual symposium for the health of your dog and your legal responsibility. The first speaker is Hilary Sell. She's a fully trained medical herbalist. She's got an honours degree at university. She's written 5 books on herbal medicine, and she's talking on prevention and cure. She's actually a very, very good specialist on both dogs and horses. And she's actually found a medical cure for Cushing's disease in horses, and she's now trying to do the same for dogs. That's really interesting, because the medical field as such can only treat Cushing's disease with drugs and not get a cure for it. Then Jimmy Simons, he's a fully qualified vet with MR, CVS, etc., etc. He's a practitioner in complementary veterinary therapy, such as acupuncture, herbal medicine, and essential oil therapy. And he set up a training school to teach other vets how to treat animals with complementary therapy, particularly acupuncture. And then in the afternoon, we've got Trevor Cooper. Now, Trevor has defended something like 500 dog owners in court cases up and down the country at a fantastic success rate. He's actually given the government guidance on setting up new laws. He advises barristers, etc., and he's probably saved about 480 dogs' lives. Some of the cases have been breed specific, where someone says that's a pit bull type and it isn't, or someone says I bought a Doberman puppy and paid £800 for it, it turned out to be a crossbreed. The speakers we have are down to earth. They talk to dog people like dog people. They don't put on airs and graces. Anybody got questions, they're prepared to answer those questions thoroughly, truthfully, right up front, so people can gain a lot of knowledge and have a very enjoyable day and do the world of dogs an awful lot of good.
If you'd like to find out more about James Wellbeloved or the symposium, you can visit www.wellbeloved.com. That's wellbeloved.co.uk. The symposium will be held in the Sports Connection, which is on the Leamington Road, which is the A445 on the outskirts of Coventry. Registration is at 9 o'clock, with tea and coffee. The first speaker will be on at 9:30, and the day will run till about 5 o'clock. There's a marvellous buffet lunch thrown in for the ticket price of £28, and there will be access to speakers during breaks. Nobody makes a profit from the day, and anything that is made is ploughed back into the world of dogs. Mike's a smashing bloke, and we do hope the day goes really well for him, and I'll certainly be there. If you have an event coming up that you would like us to publicise to our international audience, wherever you are in the world, do get in touch with us, and the addresses will be at the end of the programme. Buddy's Diary.
Buddy's a black Labrador here. This week, I'm confused. I'm generally a friendly soul, always ready to have my head patted and give a lick in return. I'm outgoing, sociable, generally a delight to be with. I'm not big-headed, it's just true. Try spending time with a Labrador and you will see. Anyway, the point is, I'm a friendly dog when I'm out and about. However, I know part of my job at home is to alert the rest of the pack to the approach of strangers. The postman, paper girl, window cleaner, anybody walking up the drive. Neighbourhood cats, pigeons, squirrels, falling leaves, and occasionally bees, if they're very big. As you can see, I keep my pack fully informed as soon as I'm aware of potential intruders. Don't misunderstand me, I'm not trying to actually frighten anyone away. I want them to come and play with me. But I want the rest of my pack to be aware, so if anyone does come to the house, we can all keep an eye out, so that they don't eat too much of our food. Food's the best thing in the house. That's what needs the most protection. When we have people around for a meal, I try to convey my sadness at the using up of our food by sitting staring at everyone eating. I arch my eyebrows up into a worried furrow. I put a glint of hope in my eyes, or even rustle up strings of drool to show my willingness to join in the feast. What does it get me? The odd comment like, poor, poor old buddy, and a couple of dog biscuits after they've all finished. Huh. Of course, I'm fed regularly, but that rotten pest insists that I'm not fed human food, as Labradors tend to run to fat. Firstly, I have enough personality to make up for a little portliness, and secondly, that vet wants to look in the mirror. But the point is that I earn my food. I take an active role in the pack. I alert to danger, I comfort, I accompany, I console. I never argue, I never contradict, I never say, not now, I'm busy. It's a strange quirk of my people that they sometimes like to keep bits of bread out on a small raised platform in the garden. Quirky though this behaviour is, I tolerate it. However, small birds often come and steal. Yes, steal the bread. I object in the time-honoured manner, charging towards embarking insistently. They scatter, fly away, but as soon as my back's turned, they come back. Should I succumb to a snooze, when I wake up, all the bread is gone. At other times, my people try storing nuts in small containers hung in the trees. No sooner are these in place than those cheeky squirrels are all over them. It takes more than a stern barking to get rid of them, because they know jolly well I can't reach them. So I'm foiled again. What with all this and the anti-cat patrol, I'm kept very busy. I don't have anything against cats as a species, but all the ones I've encountered don't play very nicely, so I don't want them in my garden. Last thing at night, I'm taken into the garden for a last chance to mooch around and do whatever I have to do. This week, when I was sniffing, I came across a very strange smell, which I followed around the edge of the garden. I went down into a sheltered corner. I could feel my hackles rising in excitement. This was a new smell. When I tracked the intruder down, he turned out to be a small, brown, hard, spiky-looking ball. Well, I'm not the smartest of dogs, but instinct told me not to touch it. So instead, I barked a warning, dancing forward as close as I dared, before dashing back to start all over again. When my people came over to see what I was making such a fuss about, I was grabbed unceremoniously by the collar and hauled away, and they were cooing, "Ooh, a hedgehog, how sweet!" I've never met a hedgehog before, but it didn't look sweet to me. To add insult to injury, while I was sent inside, a saucer of milk was produced. Milk! I never offered milk! And horror of horrors, they actually took the hedgehog some of my dog food, into which the greedy little creature sank its snout. What's a dog to make of all of this? The only thing I've decided, I shall try looking like a hard, spiky hedgehog next time. Perhaps I'll get some meal then. Until next time.
And now, over to our husband and wife news team, Kate and Nick, with the Dogcast Radio News.
Hello, I'm Nick.
And I'm Kate.
For Dogcast Radio News.
Today on the news...
A Labrador catches the train.
Dogs help around the house and out and about.
Australia's Pet Slimmer of the Year.
And the BBC apologises for dog, sorry husband, training programme.
First, we have news of a commuter in a very smart black coat. When Mike Tate and his black Labrador Archie got separated at Inverurie Station near Aberdeen, Scotland, Mike ended up on the train while poor Archie was stuck at the station. We can only assume that Mike panicked. But did Archie panic? Well, apparently not, because he boarded the very next train that came through, rode it for the few minutes it took to get to his destination, then calmly got off the train at Inch, the next station.
I guess Archie didn't buy a ticket, because while Labradors have lovely coats, they don't have pockets. In Elkhart, Indiana, a dog alerted neighbours to the fact that medical help was needed. Diabetic Marlene Huffer passed out, and the barking of Pomeranian crossbreed Danny, coupled with the failure of Marlene to open her front door, worried neighbours, and they sent for paramedics. When Marlene was taken to hospital, it was found that low blood sugar levels had caused her to faint, and thanks to Danny, she was fine. The twist here is that Danny didn't actually belong to Marlene. She was fostering him for the second chance small dog rescue. Clearly Marlene got her rewards for her good deeds, and Danny will soon get his when he goes to his permanent new home.
In Anchorage, Alaska, in the Chugach foothills, Gary Paterno was walking his 9-year-old Brittany Spaniel, Tok, when a bear attacked them. Each time the bear attacked Gary, Tok distracted the bear. 3 times the bear attacked, and 3 times Tok distracted it. Finally, the bear bolted, leaving Gary and Tok able to escape to safety. Gary had scratches and bruises, but Tok was uninjured.
2 dogs who are really man's or women's best friends. Kayla, the 9-year-old golden retriever, has slimmed down under, to become Australia's Pet Slimmer of the Year for 2005. Kayla had been owned by fish and chip shop owners before she came to live with new owners Paul and Judy Richards. They set about returning Kayla to a more healthy weight through a low-fat diet and exercise program. After losing 20 kilograms to get down to 32 kilograms, dieting off 40% of her body weight, Kayla beat around 100 other dogs to take this title. The prize was a stash of goodies from a local pet shop, £1,000 travel vouchers for her owners, and a year's supply of pet food.
Presumably that's diet pet food. After 200 complaints, the BBC in Britain apologised for its Bring Your Husband to Heel show. In the programme, animal trainer Annie Clayton advises women on how to alter their husband's behaviour using dog training methods. While the BBC says the show was intended to amuse, and the advice given certainly got results, many felt it was demeaning to men.
So, Nick, would you find that demeaning?
Not at all. You know I'll do all the housework for a tummy rub any time.
That's all for today. This is Kate.
And Nick.
Signing off for Dogcast Radio News.
Things your dog would probably never say.
Oh no, I'm all muddy now. Oh, look at the state of me. What a mess.
And now a new feature. 2-minute fiction. Abandonment. It was clear from the dog's body language that he had given up hope. From the waggless tail to the hopeless eyes, he was dejected. He lay in misery. It was all over for him. He kept his vigil, barking an unheeded warning at the people who passed by. But none of them was interested in the dark, huddled, depressed form. They kept on walking. It had been such a shock to him. He had heard it could happen, but he had never, ever in his worst cat-haunted nightmares dreamed it might happen to him. Life had been sweet, he'd thought, a loving family. But then, without warning, he was on his own. He recalled the regular walks, the good food, the companionship, and a quiet whine escaped him. He put his head down on his paws and continued the endless wait. Time passed. He neither knew nor cared how much. He was beyond caring now. Hunger gnawed at his stomach, and he was sure his coat was losing its shine. Then, a sound, a distantly familiar sound from the good old days. The car. He sat up as it swung onto the drive. Could it be? Was it? By the time the key was turned in the front door, he was ready with an exuberant welcome for them, barking excitedly, jumping, licking. The tallest one knelt down, and the dog rolled onto his back in anticipation of a tummy tickle. "Oh, dear Max," she laughed as she stroked him. "You'd think I'd left you for days, not just nipped out to pick the kids up from school." He wasn't listening. Squirming on his back, his problems clearly consigned to the past. And that was Abandonment by Julie Hill.
Things your dog would probably never say.
That is just too disgusting to eat.
Russ Williams and his dog share an unusual hobby. First of all, Russ told me how his dog got his name.
When I first got him, I wanted like a Russian name, and I was looking all through books, and the name that I liked sort of thing was that. But one day when I was looking at him with his long hair covering his eyes, I thought, God, he looks like one of the Beatles. That's why I called him Ringo Czar. is the Russian version of the Beatles, and you know, I keep telling everyone that after he's learned to do kickboxing, I'm going to learn him to teach the drums as well, like, you know.
How did it come about that you taught him kickboxing then?
Yeah, well, I do kickboxing. I teach that. I've got a gym in Kerwis in North Wales, but I also got a small security company which I run in a couple of towns, and in one of the places, the residents in between the pubs and the nightclub were complaining about the noise and everything like that, antisocial behaviour and that. So the venue nightclub put patrols on, and I was the head of security, and I went on to make sure it was all right. And then what one of my friends had given me, an American bulldog, and I took that on the street with me, and it had a brilliant effect, a calming effect with the people and that. And then I had a female American bulldog, and I was looking for another dog, and the friend that gave me them saying how good and intelligent the Black Russian Terriers were. So we seen one and I bought one, and it just seemed as it's playing, or if it like wants to come in the house or something, if it thinks the door, like a normal dog will push through the door, but this one was jumping up on the back legs and hitting the door with his front feet, and it seemed powerful. So I was thinking, God, you know, if I could get him to do that to command, then and it's like I say with the security, that I'd prefer it if someone was coming aggressively towards the dog handler, that the dog, instead of going to bite, if he jumped up and kicked him on the chest, like, it would hopefully give the attacker enough chance just to stop it. Like, you know, most dog handlers, well, nearly all dog handlers for security get them to bite in that. But to do that, you got to get them aggressive, and I didn't want, because he's a lovely natured dog, and so I just want it that it's part of a game to kick and that, not, you know, having to get him aggressive and that, because you know, not that they would, but you just never know when you got a dog that will do it on command, go and bite on command. Well, if they you know, someone gets on the nerves or something, what's the first thing they're going to do is just take a snap at them, like, so. So that's all we've been trying to do is, it seemed to be a natural thing with the Black Russian Terriers to use the front legs. But, like I say, with me kickboxing training and that, you know, I'm used to teaching young children that have got no confidence and everything like that. So it's just the same sort of way, and you reward them when they get a bit stronger in that, and you know, that's how it come about.
So, and how long did it take before he would offer that behaviour on command?
Pretty quickly, really. It was just like I say, because of me training with, you know, it's not much different, really. It might sound surprising, but it's not much different, really, than, like, a shy human that hasn't got much confidence, getting them to do it and getting the dog to do it. There wasn't much difference. He picked it up pretty quick. You know, I've only been doing it now about a month, and you know, I'm starting now that working him on pads, that I get him to hit with one paw and then both paws and that, like, you know, so it's a varying it and that, and it's you know, he can't do it on command all the time, and he's not great power all the time, but like, let's say now and again he throws a lot of power in, then you reward him, and then over time he'll just get better and better, like, you know.
Yeah. And does he enjoy the training?
Yeah, well, he enjoys the fuss and being with you, like, with myself, like, isn't it? You know, as any dog do, they like the attention, and you know, that's all dogs like doing, is being good with their owners and that, like, and getting rewards and that, like. So no, he does enjoy it.
What's his temperament like? What's his nature like? Sort of just everyday life in the house.
He's just brilliant. Just dead soft, dead good around young children and that, like. Because, you know, we haven't got any here, but my sister's got some, and she was looking after him, and I was worried, because he's a really big dog, that he'd be knocking the children over, but they were saying he's just so gentle and that around the children.
For anyone who doesn't know what a Black Russian Terrier looks like, we've got a picture of Russ and his dog on our website.
Things your dog would probably never say.
I can never get to sleep. I just lie there thinking.
The problem of missing dogs, or dogs being stolen, seems to be on the rise. Are you worried? Well, we talked to a lady who's been a victim of this crime herself, and she's fought back. She's set up a website and a support network to combat that crime. She also has advice to help stop your dog being stolen, and what to do if it is.
Hi, my name's Jane, and I have a website called dogloss.co.uk. Now, this is actually set up after my own dog went missing. I spent a frantic 6.5 weeks searching for her, putting posters up, and then I realised the system, well, there is no system, actually, for lost and found dogs. I was going from one dog warden to another who aren't in touch with each other, to kennels who aren't in touch with each other. In the end, luckily, I had a tip-off where my dog was, and I realised she wasn't missing. She'd actually been stolen and sold on in a local pub for drug money. In the end, my partner and I were put in a position we had to snatch her back. Because we'd logged her as missing, we didn't have a crime number, so it's not a criminal offence. So we had to snatch her back in the middle of the street. Then the police came out and wanted to arrest us. And the whole palaver just made us think, right, there's got to be a national lost and found site for dogs. And when we were out looking, we went from so many pounds, and all the dogs, I thought, your owner's looking for you somewhere. You could tell they were family pets, and a lot of these were about to be put to sleep.
Oh.
Because people don't know the system, they don't know where to look. So basically we thought, well, how can we do something about this to stop these dogs being put to sleep, to help the owners get more of a chance to get their dogs back? And we set up a website, thinking it would be half an hour a week, just giving people advice. But it's 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, and we now have 7,000 helpers registered nationwide, and 10 regional cooperators, which coordinate the regional things. And we're still having difficulty tracking down missing dogs. Stolen dogs are actually easier, believe it or not, to find in this country than missing, because missing could be in a kennel somewhere, locked up, inadequate paperwork, no cross-checking, and then the poor thing's put to sleep or rehomed when the owners are still looking for it. So what we did was, it's a bit like Amber Alert in America. What we do is, when someone calls us with a missing dog, we do the poster for them, because people are all over the place. We give them advice, we tell them exactly who to notify, what directions to go down. And then when we have the picture on site, we can actually press the button and automatically fax and email out that poster 30 miles around the area where the dog was last seen to all our helpers, which is done by postcode, so they can print the poster out and help, and to vets and kennels. So if any of you aren't signed up to us yet, please sign up, with the result that if we hear quick enough about a dog, we're getting about 80% of them back.
Oh,
whereas beforehand, it was probably only about 10% would get back. So this year alone, we've helped get 1,600 dogs back that probably would not have got back to their owners. Worrying, though, the statistics, 80% of the dogs we are reuniting have been stolen. Money's changed hands. About 1 in 10 people are getting ransom calls, you know, for hundreds of pounds. Everyone seems to know someone now whose dog's been stolen.
Would you have any advice, sort of, what steps can we take before the dog goes missing?
Ensure that your dog is permanently identified, either by a tattoo in the ear, which is very visible, or a microchip. Make sure you don't leave the dogs tied up outside shops or attended in cars. The message has got across really well that don't leave dogs in hot cars, so people think it's all right to leave the window open. But it's so easy for a dog thief just to put the hand in and take your dog. Also, before the dog goes missing, take time out to take photographs of your dog from both sides and from the front. Note down any distinguishing marks. Also, just be extra vigilant in the garden. If you let your dogs out in the garden, even though it's secure and you're in the house, invest in a cowbell for the gate so you can hear if someone's opening the gate. Beware of walking in the same places at the same time. Beware of people showing too much of an interest in your dog. If someone comes up and goes, is it spayed or neutered, you tell them it's spayed, even if it's not, because they're after it for breeding. Make up a fictional illness. If people are showing a lot of attention in your dog, then just say, oh, he's much older than he looks, and he's quite ill, he's a high vet bill. anything to put them off the dog. Get your dog spayed or neutered. That puts dog thieves off as well. But at the end of the day, unfortunately, any dog is at risk because some thieves know that we'll pay anything to get our own dog back.
Mm.
Whether it's a crossbreed or a little mutt, you're going to pay because you have that bond with your dog. People will cancel their honeymoons, their holidays, anything. They just, well, it's so much bond, it's like a child going. But people can't just get on with their lives. And a credible case, in actually in London last year, one from South London and one lady from North London both had red and white staffy bitches missing. They were both stolen because of the circumstances they went from secure gardens, but we managed to get them a lot of publicity in the South London and in the North London newspapers. And they were both dumped. Now, the lady went to a site in North London and, very upset, it wasn't hers, but she had the poster of the other lady's dog with her that she'd printed off the website. So she rang the other lady on the mobile and said, I think I've got your dog here. The other lady said, well, I'm actually out on a viewing myself. I'll go to that first and I'll come up to you. Well, you can imagine what happened,
mm-hmm.
can't you?
Yeah.
They both found each other's dogs when they met halfway.
Aww.
Would they have found them otherwise? Because in places like London, it's so easy to get miles away so quickly on the tube and just sell them on.
Yeah.
And beware of people selling dogs in pubs.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I had a call just last week. This lady was in the right state. She was outside a pet shop. She said, my dog's just been nicked. And I said, how long ago? Just about 2 minutes ago. And luckily, we had a poster up in the pet shop advertising news that the dogs were going missing. So I said, well, right, go straight to the local pub now. Phone all your friends, get them to go into the local pub. Your dog is being sold on instantly. Oh, no, I better go to Bassett Dog's Home first. And I'm saying, well, why do you want to go to Bassett Dog's Home? No one's going to steal your dog and then take it off across London and dump it in Bassett Dog's Home. People just don't think logically. And then she wants to phone the police. And I said, look, it's going to take you 20 minutes to get through to them. And they're not going to do anything. Luckily, I was able to calm her down enough to get her to the pub. 5 minutes later, she ran about, I don't believe it. I walked into the first pub and there was my dog being sold.
Huh?
Well, you just think about it. Would you leave your handbag tied up outside a shop and expect it to be there? And dogs are worth far more to us than a handbag. If I could make a final appeal, if any of you listening to this could join us as helpers, the more helpers we get, the more dogs we get back. It's directly related to the amount of people that we can inform, and one day you might need us.
There's a link on our website to Jane's website and also to the Lost Labs website. If any other breed organisations would be interested in working alongside Jane, do get in touch, because it's very useful in tracking down lost or stolen dogs if people with breed-specific knowledge work together.
Things your dog would probably never say.
Oh, have you been out? I didn't notice.
That's it for this month. Don't forget, you can find more information about all the things we've talked about in the show on our website, www.dogcastradio.com, and also links to all the websites we've mentioned. Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio. If you'd like to contact us wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can contact us by phone from the UK on 0121 288 0922. If you're in the US, you can contact us on our New York number, which is 315 849 2022. From anywhere else in the world, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121 288 0922. If you have a Skype phone, you can contact us with the ID Dogcast Radio, that's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact us at julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these details can be found on our website, www.dogcastradio.com. And the final word goes to Jenny.
A very worried man brought his hamster into the vet surgery. "I'm worried about my hamster," said the man. "I'm afraid," replied the vet, "that your hamster is dead." "No, he can't be," said the man. The vet brought a Labrador into the surgery, but the dog sadly shook his head. The man still didn't believe the vet, so the vet brought a cat into the surgery. The cat shook his head. "I'm sorry, but I did tell you he was dead," said the vet. "I'm afraid that would be $250.
$250, protested the man.
The vet said, "Yes, you had a lab report and a CAT scan."